Hola, and welcome back to Vos Memos. In this episode, I'll be talking about how we have completely lost the user experience to for-profit social media giants. Click fatigue, useless AI, and UI degradation are all symptoms of the destruction we are actively creating to the internet as we know it. So if you're interested in hearing a little bit of a UX rant, stay tuned because you're listening to Vos Memos. Okay, so what authority do I have to even talk about this topic? Well, one, I did take the Google UI UX certification, so there's one thing. Google says I can talk about this. And two, I did take a class, one class in college, so that basically makes me an expert, right? No, but really, I'm just a UI UX enthusiast, and I see the principles everywhere because once they're pointed out to you, you can't really escape them. I mean, it's a blessing and a curse, I'll say, because for one, if something is frustrating me on a website, then I'll just blame it on bad UI. And so I don't feel like I do anything wrong. I can do no wrong. No user error. It's just all bad UI. But it is an issue because now I just see it everywhere. It like sticks out like a sore thumb. And so I think it's very interesting, for example, with my first topic, click fatigue, I want to talk about SharePoint. For those of you who work in a Microsoft Office workplace, I'm sure you know the pain of SharePoint. And I've noticed that, well, one, I mean, SharePoint, it's just a file organization system in the cloud, right? It shouldn't be that hard. But for some reason, my colleagues can never find what they're looking for on SharePoint. And I would attribute it to bad UI. And there are some things that are bad about SharePoint. But mostly, in their case, it is user error. Because for me, if it takes more than 3 clicks to get somewhere, I'm bookmarking that shit. Like, I am not going to click, 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 click. Ain't no way. Especially if it's a file that I access all the time. And I do think SharePoint could give like a saved filters kind of search tool to help you get to those folders faster. Honestly, maybe they already have it. I haven't really looked into it because I just use the search bar. It, for all of the things that Microsoft Office does poorly with search, like I know Outlook is infamous for its poor search features. SharePoint, the search feature actually works, okay? You can find things if you know the name of it. And so that's usually how I find things. Sorry if you can hear Bobby in the background. She's in her Zoomies. Anyway, yeah. So I usually use the search. I don't really click on a folder, then click in the subfolder. But I notice for my older coworkers and colleagues, if they have the path memorized, then that's the path they'll take every single time. Because they're like, okay, first I go to this folder, then I go to this subfolder. And even if it's 10 clicks, if they have that process memorized, that's the way they're doing it. To a fault, because SharePoint, we have this one PowerPoint that me and a coworker have to help make every single week. It's the same title, but with a new date. And it's supposed to be in the 2024 folder. And for some reason, it keeps getting moved to the 2023 folder. We don't know why. It's probably just because SharePoint sucks. But if you just search for it, you would never even know it's in the 2023 folder. But my colleagues are hellbent on clicking through the path that they have memorized and thus it becomes a big deal when it's not in the right spot. And of course, we move it to the right spot once we can. Ideally, it would just be in the 2024 folder and I wouldn't be ranting about this at all. But SharePoint is SharePoint and and technology can never work the way we want it to. All this to say, click fatigue. I don't understand why it's even taking more than 3 clicks to get to these files that we all are using constantly every day in my workplace. I have created a system of just bookmarking certain folders because that's faster than trying to search for it. But for my colleagues that haven't really figured out that system or don't care to, I don't know how they're clicking all these things. Like, I just won't do it. I will not click more than 3 times. It's probably not worth it if I have to click that many times. And part of this is because our attention spans have been shortened so much by social media algorithms. I expect the information to just be served up to me automatically. I don't even want to click or search for it, honestly. Like, if SharePoint could have an AI algorithm in it that knew, oh, it's the next week, you probably want to access that presentation with the new date for this week, and it just showed me at the top what I'm most likely to click on, that would be amazing. That would be actually useful AI. And the problem is, so many companies are introducing AI that is unnecessary because it's flashy and it helps the stock prices and the shareholders. Fuck the shareholders. They need to figure out that a software patch is just as important as a flashy AI tool. Because the thing is, we could be using AI to help increase efficiency by learning patterns, because that's what AI is good at, is just learning patterns. And that would be so much more helpful than trying to force AI with the most infamous ChatGPT generative text AI. It's not good. It's not good at generating text because it's not creative. It's trying to just find a pattern in human language. And that's when it becomes boring and predictable and useless garbage. When in reality, I need AI to just change all the dates on my PowerPoint that I copied from last week, right? I need AI to find out, like, oh, you changed the date from May 5th to May 10th. Let me just change that everywhere in the PowerPoint. And I know that sounds so lame. Like, the shareholders are not going to be excited by that. But I'm excited by that. And I'm the user. Like, the problem is, again, profits over user experience. And this kind of ties into this trendy new word that I learned, techno-feudalism. It's kind of popping up in like the Fringe podcast and like some underground Medium articles. But the thing is, techno-feudalism is kind of this next stage of capitalism. Bobby had nothing to say. She just wants to cause chaos. The power of the internet is simply in the hands of a few powerful men. I'm talking Elon Musk, Mark Zuckerberg, whoever is in charge of TikTok. I don't know them, but maybe I should. Yeah, all the power is centralized within these few tech bro feudal lords, and all us serfs, social media users, are completely subservient to their will. In fact, many people are completely reliant on social media to generate a profit, either for their small business, they're an influencer / content creator. Maybe they're not even a small business. Maybe they're like a full-blown restaurant or podcast, blog, you name it. They're relying on social media to create profits at the will of these feudal lords. Thus, techno-feudalism was born. It's scary. It's scary because so much of our culture is driven by these apps. So much of our commerce is driven by these apps. And we all hate these guys, and yet we gave them all the power. Not willingly, but subconsciously. So that's on click fatigue and a little bit about techno-feudalism. I want to talk more about how social media, being the dominant hub of the internet, has now created just useless search for Google, for finding websites, for finding cool things on the internet. First of all, Google search. We all heard about it, how AI is going to start summarizing things at the top if it hasn't already. Furthermore, there's like these widgets that I mean, the widgets already kind of auto summarize like the first article they found, and that's AI. And then, so if they're not generating text based on articles, they're just AI summarizing articles in your Google search, which is not welcome. I can summarize my own articles, thank you. If you want to skip past the Google in-house widgets, what you're going to find is a bunch of listicles that are SEO search engine optimized, right? SEO articles that are related to your question, but probably don't actually answer it. Or if they do, it's at the very bottom and you have to scroll all the way through. Or I'm constantly hearing complaints about recipes and how awful they are to deal with on the internet because they have like that whole blog at the top about the life story of the blogger. But what people don't realize is SEO articles need to be a certain length, usually 300 words or more, but not too long. They also need to be full of keywords, and what those stories at the beginning of the recipe do is check all the boxes on an SEO article. They make it the right length, because if you just had the recipe, it would be like, what, 200 words? Recipes aren't that long. Actually, the shorter they are, the better. And they infuse the article with more and more keywords related to your search so that that recipe gets boosted to the top of your Google search. Is that mind-blowing? It actually made the article so much worse because it has to cater to SEO to get to that first page of Google. So somehow the first page of Google is now having the worst results, at least for humans. For the algorithm, the search algorithm, it's great. It's checking all the boxes multiple times. You searched how to make sourdough. That article with the whole like author backstory probably said sourdough like 20 times, right? And that's why it's at the top. I really didn't connect the dots on that until recently. But now I get it. And people have, I think there's some website out there, I'll link it in the show notes, that takes the recipe and just cuts out all that garbage. So that's a useful tool if you're sick of scrolling through all that garbage. But what this also points out is just how bad search has gotten with SEO. It's supposed to be a tool to get the right articles to the top of the Google search, but it's just cannibalizing that type of search. In fact, I've seen a couple of things about how people are just appending Reddit to the end of their search queries because at least that gets you an answer from a real human. And probably an answer like a recent one too. I feel like some of these SEO listicles are like 5 years old and they're still like at the top of the search because they check all the boxes. Just some musings on Google search. As a blogger myself, I never expect my blog post to get very many views. I'm doing it because I love it. It's kind of like a therapy. I blog because I write to process. I write to document my own life. And then sometimes I can share my articles with a friend in need, right? And if my article gets one view, that's great. But it would be nice if, like, somebody searched up a topic related to my blog, if it would actually come before all those garbage listicles. I don't know. Might be nice. Might be nice for the internet to work the way it's supposed to and for things that are important and interesting to be easily found. Just thought, you know. So we're living in algorithm hell on social media. We have terrible search results on Google, and all the power is centralized in those billionaire tech bros, right? So what do we do? Do I have anything optimistic to say on this topic? I do. First of all, if you haven't been following my get off social media journey, get off social media. I don't have Instagram on my phone, and I probably look at it like a couple times a week, mostly for this podcast, just to like add some clips, do a fun video, share the link, because I am also trapped in the social media hell of discoverability is completely isolated to social media. So I'm trying to play the game. And then what else? I do find myself scrolling on YouTube Shorts, which is awful. I don't know why I do it. They're even worse than Instagram Reels. So I need to find a way to like just get rid of YouTube Shorts. Ideally, maybe I just delete the YouTube app and look at it on Chrome or something. I don't know. I don't know why you can't opt out. I'll still go on YouTube. Like, please, YouTube. Don't destroy yourself like Instagram. Anyway, still don't have Instagram on my phone, and it's great. I feel like I feel more confident about myself because I'm not subconsciously comparing myself to other people. I feel more creative because the source of my creativity is more organic. For example, like I went to see an art gallery last weekend with my friend Courtney, and it was amazing. The art was so interesting and so different than what social media thinks is good art. Like, I don't want Mark Zuckerberg to determine what good art is because some artist made a 5-second reel. That's fucked up. Good art should be determined by us, the users, and it's just messed up to me that we're completely reliant on these algorithms to show us what's important. And if like the first 5 people that see that art don't like it, then it's dead, right? Like that reel is dead and no one else is going to see it. But if the first 5 people love it, then suddenly it's a viral video. Like, that is insane to me. And so, yeah, my art is more creative now because I'm finding organic and real sources of inspiration. What else? Other benefits of being off of social media. I don't feel like a social media zombie in public. I feel like if you're chronically online, sometimes the conversation is just completely made of memes, which is fine. It's kind of fun, right? Like, we're all watching the same trends and then, like, we just go back and forth the different sound bites, but that's not a conversation of substance. So I like having conversations about real things and not just internet culture, even though that's what this whole podcast is talking about today. I'm critiquing it. I'm not participating. My other solutions to this terrible dilemma that we found ourselves in is newsletters. I talked about this in my last podcast. Please subscribe to people's newsletters. If you see a brand or a creative on social media, go to their website, follow their newsletter, because we need to separate ourselves from our dependency on social media to show us the cool things. Like, imagine if you didn't have to even scroll, you just had people's cool stuff show up in your inbox. Or ancient technology, RSS feed, right? If you just subscribe to the cool people's RSS feeds, then you don't have to look at Instagram. Or you can just look at it for your friends, because that's what it was supposed to be for. One interesting thing, so 10 years ago, 2014, Instagram only let you post in square. That's crazy, right? Like, 10 years ago, that's all it was, just square photos of your friends. And then now it's this monstrosity that has taken over everything. So last thing on saving the internet, I have a prediction that once we get over the ChatGPT fad and generative text fad, we're actually going to use AI for useful things, and websites will have a more curated feed for visitors. Because imagine how much better it would be if, like, even just like shopping, online shopping, like you go to Aeropostale or Abercrombie and Fitch. I don't know why I'm A. The first two A websites that I think of besides Amazon. So you go to your online shopping site of choice, and instead of just like the hot trends, it actually knows based on like your previous search history, your cookies, and then an AI algorithm, it actually knows what to serve you up on the home page. That would be so much more useful than just landing on it and then getting completely overwhelmed by what they have on the site. So just an idea, a prediction, a hope, a dream for what the internet could be. I think AI can be good to personalize things. I really do. It's just being used in the most garbage, weird way to like make weird AI assistants and AI friends. Like, I don't need that. I really don't need that. So I hope you've enjoyed this episode. Kind of a rant, kind of rambly, but I just like nerding out about UX, UI stuff. If you want to follow the pod, it is on Instagram at VosMemos. It's also on my blog, angelageorge.com/vos-memos. And you can subscribe on Apple, Spotify, and YouTube. So thanks for listening, and I'll see you in the next one. Bye.